Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn, ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn, tell people to stay off the lawn, compare it to your neighbor's lawn, and complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
I can't believe it.
That Gerald is presenting the quarterly budget report with finger puppets?
Look, here comes a 1.7% decrease in fixed overhead. Hello, everybody.
No, I can't believe how easy it was to save hundreds of dollars on my car insurance with Geico.
Who are you? The projected increase in organic Q3 revenue. Hooray!
Believe it. Geico could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
It's Morphin time!
On This Week in Geek.
That was awesome. Actually, could I get that one more time? I forgot to turn my mic down.
Oh yeah, sure. You ready?
Plus, I just want to make you do it again.
Ah, yeah. That's what they all say. Ready? It's Morphin time! On This Week in Geek.
Been destroyed because of this freak. I won't allow it.
These babies just saved this lame fest party.
And now, a thought from Geico Motorcycle. It took 15 minutes to take a spirit animal quiz online.
Please be the cheetah. Please be the cheetah.
And learn your animal isn't the cheetah, but the far less appealing blobfish.
Oh, come on.
To add insult to injury, you could have used those 15 blobfish minutes to switch your motorcycle insurance to Geico.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on motorcycle insurance.
Everybody, it's not Birdman, it's Alex, and we have another Twig show for you, but it's a little different because everybody's been sick here and there. Birdman is unavailable at this time, so it's going to be me and Mr. Christopher.
That's me. I'm here too.
All right. So it's going to be probably a shorter show, simply because it's only two of us, and personally, I have been under the weather since Saturday. I thought I was dying, so... I was so cold, shivering. I've had maybe a solid sleep, like 4 hours in the last 3 days. So I'm in, I guess, recovery mode. And I was like, we still need to get a show out. So we've got content. And we're, I guess, going to do the best we can here.
Yeah, for once, I've actually not been sick and not been overwhelmingly busy with work and everything else. I actually have a week off of work now, so I can focus on getting everything else in my life kind of back on track and caught up and do housework and laundry and all those other things that fall behind when you get too busy in life. No colds to speak of, no flu-like symptoms. It's kind of a rarity. I'm sleeping well. Everything's kind of nice. And I'm going to knock on wood right now just to make sure that actually stays that way. As for what I've been doing lately, The Division came out recently, and I've been playing The Division quite a bit over the last little while. I'm almost at the level cap, which is taking a lot longer than I thought it was going to be. And wow, is this game difficult to actually play. I die a lot more in this one than I did in the first one, I gotta say.
Yeah, I'm playing that game as well, and I'm finding I like the game better overall. The level design is better. There's a lot more diversity in the landscape and everything, but you die a lot quicker because it's less bullet spongy.
Yeah, both the enemies and yourself can take a lot less punishment before dying, and the enemies are a lot smarter. They flank a lot, they use grenades, and they're fairly accurate with them. They know how to get you out of your hiding spot and force you to think on your feet or die, and I die more than I think on my feet.
Like, I'm terrified to try to play the, like, missions on the harder or even harder difficulties.
Yeah, I can understand that. What I've heard, though, is that the hard difficulties don't give you more experience, so don't worry about that too much at the leveling stage. Worry about that when you've reached the end game, then you get better loot. It's all about
loot. It's more like loot, right? Yeah. Because in the first game, I got really good, and I could actually solo a lot of the missions myself, even on hard. Because you end up learning, like, here's all the tricks, like, stand here and shoot from here, move here. I remember in the very first game's first mission, which is, I think, the hospital. Is that what it was?
Yeah, no, it was a hospital in the first game.
No, it wasn't a hospital. It was the very first mission. Was it
like I can picture it. Or something? I can picture where it is, and I can picture the layout of the level, but I don't remember exactly where it is. It feels like there was some sort of medical facility involved with it, but it might have just been turned into a medical facility in the
post-apocalyptic world. Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure it was an arena. Yeah, I think it was an arena. So that one, you could go in, and at the very end, you're supposed to like run out and beat wave after wave of these guys before a final boss shows up and you just have to shoot him to death. Well,
usual formula.
It turned out you could just go in, shimmy along the side where you were basically out of the line of sight of everybody, go right to the very edge where nobody could see you or shoot at you, and you could snipe the guy before he even walks out and then get the loot and it's over. So I probably did that level like 100 times to get the best loot.
Yeah, if there's a way to farm efficiently, people will find it and people will use it.
Yeah. So for this one, I'm not there yet. I'm taking my time to basically do all the exploration. What is a lot harder about this game is the first game, you could go and, you know, you had your safe houses in all the different regions. If you were fast enough and ran away from people, you could be like level 10 and go into areas that were like level 20 and just go to the safe house so you could do fast travel. In this one, it's a lot harder to get into other zones if you're not at the right level.
It's a big map, too. There's a lot of running around to do and a lot of hazards along the way. So it's easy to say, okay, well, I'm going to go unlock this new safe house and run into something that just kills you flat out because it's too tough for you to take on.
Yeah, and I mean, and other than that, I've had a few other games that I've been checking out, but not much. It's been more, you know, other than being sick, it's like I've been watching TV to catch up on stuff. And when you're not fully well, it's a lot harder to get into one of those in-depth games like that. So I've been more like playing puzzle games on my phone and stuff in bed.
Little things you can do for a few minutes at a time and doesn't take too much brain power.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think, what else we got? There's a lot of stuff coming out soon. So I want to get through The Division and give them a proper review. I think the goal that Birdman and I had for the review copies we got was to do something for this weekend, but it all depends on how far we get. So it may be either this weekend or next weekend at the very latest.
Well, as long as it happens eventually, I'm sure we'll get some good quality into it.
Definitely. Anything else new with you?
Not really. Other than that, I'm just enjoying some time off from my full-time job and trying to relax around the home. So that's been a nice change of pace for me, really. But it lets me focus a bit more on the things I want to do. The things I have to do. It's a staycation. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going to sunny Florida or anything like that. So I don't have to spend any money, which is nice. So
oh, yeah.
I get time off of work without having to worry about funding.
Very true. So I think with that, we're going to head off into the news. And after that, we've got reviews of 2-1-1, which is a new Nicolas Cage movie that I had the opportunity to review, as well as we've got a review of Fear the Wolves from you later on in the show.
An unfortunate story, but let's get on with the show.
All right, so we'll be back with the news.
Need a new weapon in your battle against evil? Check out LibrisArcana.com for Canada's premier RPG dice subscription service for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping. You can get a new complete set of role-playing dice from D4s to D20s delivered straight to your door. Dice themes are new each month and can be anything your mind can imagine and beyond. Visit LibrisArcana.com and subscribe for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping and be prepared to open up new worlds of adventure.
News on the march!
Yes, it's news time. And
news.
It's been fairly eventful the last week or so.
It's eventful every week.
We actually had a hard time, you know, picking out, you know, a good three stories that, you know, from all the others. There was probably like 10 other stories we could have gone with, but we went, okay, what's most pertinent to us? So we came up with three that are very, I would say, very related to us and what we like.
Yeah, they're the nerdiest of the stories that we found for the week. So we wanted to make sure that we stay on topic, stay focused on the things that you actually want to hear from us. So from the top, James Gunn has been reinstated for Guardians of the Galaxy 3, finally. After all the begging and pleading, including from the cast and the fans, Disney has decided to rehire Gunn after he was fired last July, after alt-right journalists made a public a whole bunch of his tweets from his earlier days that weren't exactly kosher.
And the interesting thing with him was, like, these aren't he wasn't like these were statements that he made truly believing anything. He was he worked for Troma for years, so like his whole shtick was to be over the top and crazy. It always was like that, and I think that he had just finished doing his first like real feature that wasn't through Troma, which was I think Slither at the time, which was still a very you know, out there sort of crazy, I guess, dark comedy sci-fi thing. And it was like, it's a very different time, and not just because, you know, he was working for Disney, but like he was way younger in his career. So anybody that took that and made it seem like, you know, that was his personal beliefs, they were too dumb, to be honest. Like, I have no idea why they even, you know, fired him in the first place.
I think it was a knee-jerk reaction to something that was viewed as too provocative. Fox News and such brought it to light. There's rumors they did it because Gunn has been very much anti-Trump, and so they went back into Gunn's past and dug up what they could to smear him, and it seemed to have worked. They wanted to make sure that people saw him for what he truly was, which isn't true at all. It's him being provocative for the sake of being provocative and not really thinking those things. And then having grown up since then, admitting his mistakes and admitting them early and often. It wasn't, he didn't blame anyone. He didn't try to slander anyone or fight back. He just said, you know, I did something wrong, and that's not reflective of who I am today. It's something I did in the moment to be a provocateur, and I regret it.
Well, yeah, and if you look at his career that he did afterwards, like, this guy, he's very tongue-in-cheek. He's very, like, his comedies that he's done, like, when he was independent, he made that series that went on, I think, Spike and other things, PG porn, where it was basically fake porn movies, where it was all the bad acting and none of the porn. And he had, like, Nathan Fillion and all these people in them, and they're hilarious, but again, they're very subversive and strange. But you can see that was sort of his transition into doing more like broadly open things, whereas his movies initially were, you know, either unrated or when he worked for Troma, like NC-17 stuff that they would do because they were so over the top schlocky. And, you know, he worked for Disney, so you have to be very careful with what you have, but it's not like he went back. Like, if he felt guilty about these things, he would have gone back and deleted his tweets years ago. So in his mind, it was clearly like this was so long ago, it didn't even matter.
Yeah, it's something that was put into the past. It's not something that he needed to consider today. It's not something he needed to worry about anymore because people had let it go. He wasn't thinking about it. It wasn't on his mind. He wasn't staying up at night about it because, oh God, why did I send those tweets? Why did I do that? It just didn't matter
anymore. At the
time,
his fans were his fans because that was his style of comedy. He's changed his style of comedy as time goes on, like people do.
He's grown as a director, and it shows that he's incredibly talented. And what he said back then has nothing to do with his work on Guardians of the Galaxy. So it's good to see that he's able to continue working on Guardians of the Galaxy. And we will have Guardians of the Galaxy 3 directed by who it was intended to be directed by, cast and crew and everything going to be intact. We're going to get a third installment of a very successful franchise that was up in the air for the longest time.
And this means that the script won't have to be doctored or changed because he can use his original shooting script.
So hopefully we can actually see the continuation of plot threads and it won't suddenly be this different movie that has nothing to do with the previous two. We'll actually get what we were intended to get from the beginning. So I'm excited.
Exactly. And I think there might have been some pressure as well. Like the actors that, you know, were saying, hey, you should hire him back, especially Batista as Drax. He had come out and said that if Gunn wasn't rehired, he wasn't going to shoot.
And they took a very strong stance for it. They didn't want to back down. They said Gunn or nothing. And it's good. I like to see that kind of conviction and willingness to, I guess, sacrifice the opportunity to be in a highly grossing film. Because you know that even if Gunn wasn't directing 3, if 3 came out, it was still going to do well in theaters, even if it ended up being a bad movie.
It just might not have done quite as well, and there still would have always been this looming thought of what would happen if Gunn had directed it.
Yeah, what could this movie have been? And now we'll get to find out what the movie will be.
Yes, and you know, on top of that, I almost think that this might be a reaction to, there's talk that like he's shooting the Suicide Squad movie, and he's got the script. There's a lot of buzz that it's actually quite good. So I'm wondering, like, the deal they've made is that he's able to finish his project with DC and then move back. Yeah, I'm wondering if it was out of fear that he would make Suicide Squad popular and then DC would try to contact him and contract him in for like another 3 or 4 films or something.
Yeah, all
and
of a sudden you've got a strong director on the DC franchises. Apparently the Suicide Squad movie is going to be a reboot, not number 2. So they already acknowledged that Suicide Squad was not good. So let's try again. Let's do a second one. It's not a sequel. Let's just start over again and do Suicide Squad right from the beginning with Gunn at the helm. So that should be good. And then we get back from Marvel.
Exactly. So I feel like they went, oh shit, if this movie that he's making for DC turns out good, they're going to want to gobble him up for like a long-term contract. And then we're screwed if we can't find a good director for Guardians. So, you know, I am willing to bet he's going to get paid more money now than he was before.
most likely.
Yeah.
But, I'd like to see him work on a whole bunch of movies that could potentially be coming out in the near future, because in our second story, the Disney-Fox merger looks like it is about to finally finalize. Scheduled for March 20th at 12:02 a.m. Fox and Disney will be completed
Wednesday. So there's probably going to be a press event that they're going to announce something right away. Because they've probably already got things in the works. Or how hilarious it would be if it just fell apart the last minute. I don't think it can.
But no, I think at this point it's 100% happening. It's just a formality. But finally, the franchises like X-Men, Deadpool, and Fantastic Four will be moving to Disney-owned Marvel Studios.
Which means I'm willing to bet that, like, there was talk that the Marvel movies, the Fox-based Marvel properties, were not going to transfer over until the projects they currently have in the works were out, because, you know, they're still producing some of them, right? Like New Mutants, which has been in development hell for a while now, and Dark Phoenix. Well, I get the feeling that they're handing them over early with the rest of the properties because they know those movies are going to be crap. And they'd rather have, like, we don't want to deal with it. Here you go. Here you go, Marvel. You can have them now.
We've had our fill.
Yeah, because what'll happen is, I fully predict they're going to scrap the X-Men one altogether. I wouldn't be surprised. This would be the time, if you're going to, you know, spend crazy money to get Hugh Jackman in for a Wolverine appearance, this would be the time to have him, you know, appear in some sort of crossover with, who knows, like Deadpool or the Avengers.
Because Deadpool would be a strong one, because there's already the Deadpool-Wolverine dynamic in existence, and that's the type of thing people actually want to see. But having him join the Avengers team would be quite the event. It would be a crossover for things that are already just essentially giant crossover series.
Yeah, like the only way that would really work is if it was one of those cases where, like, there could be an explanation as to why the X-Men haven't been seen in the rest of the Marvel universe, and it could be that they're from a different Earth, right? Like, you know, one of the multiverse. So they could do something where it's like, hey, all the multiverses are converging and we got to stop somebody.
I think I like that kind of idea. It they need an explanation as to why these, why the term mutant hasn't existed in the Avengers universe, because they use enhanced individual because they weren't allowed to say mutants. But having some sort of event occur where it brings universes together would explain a hell of a lot. But the Fox Marvel series has already kind of been heavy on the writing a reason why things didn't happen before but are happening now trope. They do that a lot.
Yeah. Well, imagine, like, you know, the Juggernaut was in Deadpool 2, right? Imagine Wolverine just tearing him apart. Or trying to.
Yeah. That's easier said than done.
And we haven't seen, I don't think, Omega Red. There's a few characters that you could pull in.
I think it just gives a lot more longevity to the Avengers as a whole, as we're moving into a new age of the Avengers. And I'm sure they have their ideas for Phase 4 and what's happening after Endgame. But having a lot more material to draw from and having entirely new directions to take it now that the X-Men are a part of the MCU, potentially, like they can be now. So now you have a massive pool of people to characters to draw from.
It'll probably be more so that the Fantastic Four get integrated into the Avengers first, because it's not like their properties have done well. They're good characters. They just haven't had good movies. So putting them in the Avengers would be good. Or in Iron Man or something, you know, have them show up, you know, cause they have another building in New York with, like near Stark, Enterprises. Right. So they could just have him at a board meeting or something, have Mr. Fantastic there.
Yeah, just slowly introduce the character, have the hint thing. The MCU does so well where they drop, here's a name that might come into play in 4 or 5 movies from now, just so you know we acknowledge this character exists and we can build on that. They have that opportunity now where they can introduce these characters, not so much as their superhero counterparts, but as their regular identity, just saying, hey, look for this character in the future, because it might happen.
We got, do you know what I think might do better than a Fantastic Four movie? They might be smart to put it on the Disney Plus streaming app, like make a TV show.
Yeah, I could see that working. Disney Plus is kind of just getting on its heels now, and it would be a good opportunity for them to come up with a bunch of new shows. Fantastic Four, more X-Men stuff. An X-Men series would be just great. Like, it would do fine.
Well, it would be Mutant X from the late 90s.
Just having a live-action X-Men show with a strong production budget. That sounds exciting.
That would be nice, actually, yeah. You see, I've always wondered, like, what would happen if HBO was like, we've licensed it and we're going to make an X-Men TV show? You're like, what? I guess, well, no, it probably would have been what the last two Wolverine movies were. Especially, like, the R-rated, I'm saying in quotes, cut of the Wolverine. Where it's just like, they actually, I don't know. Now that I'm thinking about it, what HBO would do. Because they're not, they haven't really done any superpower type shows. But, yeah, like, I'm wondering what's going to, like, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Like, I imagine there'll be some announcement on Wednesday. And then we're probably going to have to wait until Comic-Con before something really big gets announced.
Yeah, because officially they can't work on projects until the merger goes through. So it's not like they have storyboards and everything ready to go. I'm sure there's ideas mulling around in people's heads, but nothing committed to paper until everything is finalized. And then they can just go nuts. So I can see a slew of ideas coming out in the next little while and then taking a long time for it to actually come to fruition. So patience will be required to see what comes out of this merger.
Yeah, okay. And on our last story today for the regular news is EA paid Ninja, the streamer, $1 million to stream Apex Legends. That's insane. That's not to review anything. That's not to even like it. Just to stream it.
It doesn't surprise me at all. As influencers, as they're known, are a major force for advertising now. It used to be all about product placement and celebrity endorsement. Well, that's evolved now into paying YouTubers and Twitch streamers and Mixer, if you're on Mixer or whatever other platforms you are, putting a little bit of money in as a game developer to advertise these games through those personalities is much more cost effective than spending several million dollars in an advertising plan to have commercials everywhere. When you have someone like Ninja, who has something like 13 million Twitch followers, just having him play that game for one day will bring unprecedented attention to your new title. And it did. I mean, Apex Legends has over 50 million players now after 1 month of it being out. So, you know, obviously, insane, they did something like, right.
I would love somebody to give me $1 million to play a game.
Yeah. I mean, if I got paid $1 million for every game I played, oh, man, I'd be set for life. But it's...
And, you know, he didn't even have to do any sexual favors to get that million either. Like, come on.
No, he didn't have to do anything special under the table or over it. It just... He just has this presence. He has that following, so he's able to command this sort of deal. He gets paid a lot of money to do the things he does. And it takes a lot of skill, a lot of hard work, and a lot of talent, and a little bit of luck, not going to lie there, to make it on a platform like Twitch. But it pays off if you end up being one of the most successful people in the world. He makes over $500,000 a month from Twitch. And more than that on successful or good months, apparently.
That's insane.
It's absolutely insane. $6 million a year to play video games on the internet. That's oversimplifying what Twitch is. I'm trying to get into being a Twitch streamer, so there's a lot of research to be done. There's a lot of hard work that goes into it. Social media presence and understanding business. There's a lot of business knowledge you need to be successful to that level. So it's a lot of work, and don't think that it's just getting paid to play games on the internet. But essentially, if you want to really boil it down, that's what it looks like, and that's what it feels like to a lot of people, is you just play games for 8 hours a day and make $1 million every other month. It's
well, and of course, you know, like I know there's a lot of work that goes into it, but at the same time, like, it's, I almost feel like, compared to like when YouTubers make actual videos and that, this is the laziest form of media you can create and get $1 million for it.
It's easy to look at it that way, and it's true for some successful YouTubers that they don't really put that much value into it, and the reason that they're so successful and now so rich because of Twitch is because they're good at a video game. It's important to be entertaining.
The reason I'm saying that is, for this one, he's not being told he has to win anything or he has to be good. He just has to play it.
Yeah, admittedly, he is very good at the games. That's part of his appeal, is that he's very good, but he's also a good presence. He's a good personality, and that's more important on a platform like Twitch, is you're putting on a show. All the successful Twitch streamers, many of them have talent at the games that they're playing, and they're very skilled at it, and that's what draws the attention of the viewers. But the best streamers are not only at least good enough at the game to be consistently entertaining, but their entire channel has an entertainment value, so it's easy to tune in day after day. They, you know, you can tune in from 8 in the morning till noon Monday through Friday and watch your favorite streamer, just like you used to watch your favorite television programs. It's reliable and it's entertaining consistently, so you tune in like you would any other program.
Yeah, so I mean, I get it. I just think to myself, like, that is just crazy money. He better be careful. Make sure that he puts away his tax money for it.
Yeah.
That's money that you're getting as an independent contractor that you're not paying tax on initially. So, like, he's got to be paying, like, $3 or $4 million in taxes a year.
Guaranteed. He's making a lot of money, so it means you have to pay a lot of money to taxes. And when things come in, like donations from Twitch viewers, you have to be careful to set it aside, otherwise you're going to get screwed when it comes tax time. You also have to be careful of trolls and people who make false donations, so you need to make sure you protect yourself from that. It's gotten a lot better than it used to be. A few years ago, it was possible for people to do a lot of chargebacks and really screw over some streamers, but there's been a lot of extra protections put in for that over the last few years to make sure that doesn't happen. It's a dangerous prospect as a career, because it's not long-term sustainable.
Well, here's his thing. He could, if he's smart with his money, I hope he is, he could quit right now and live the rest of his life on the money he's earned.
That's absolutely true. It's not necessarily something that every successful Twitch streamer is going to be doing, though. Not everyone's good with money. But you have to think that a Twitch streamer has a lifespan. there's never going to be someone who streams on Twitch for the next 50 years. It's just not something that's going to happen. Something's going to change.
He's probably got like 3 years left because there'll be a point where he gets burnt out.
Yeah, and streamers do get burned out. It happens all the time. There's a streamer by the name of Summit1G who was playing Fortnite and hated it. Absolutely hated it. He burned completely out and took a break from streaming. And now he's come back and he's the number one Sea of Thieves streamer. And he's good. But he's good now because he enjoys what he's doing. And that's important for Twitch streaming. But I can see him burning out on that eventually anyway. If you're playing the same game 8 hours a day, every single day, it's going to get boring eventually. But streaming as a whole is going to get boring, or it's going to become something that you don't keep up with because the meta of streaming, the meta of what's happening in the world and sharing games might change. Twitch and YouTube kind of came out of nowhere, and they might go somewhere just as quickly. So you need to take the skills that you're learning from streaming and apply them to something else and help yourself grow and maybe get a career doing something related, like working in production in a full-fledged company, not so much being self-employed as a Twitch streamer, but working for somewhere where you have job security.
Absolutely. Like it's going to be interesting to see where things go, especially if they're starting to give out $1 million, bonuses to people for individual games, right?
Yeah. And this was just one day. Like Apex Legends, they said after the first day of streaming that they didn't pay anybody to play the game. So it was 1 million for one day of streaming. So, I mean, I'm not saying that the Twitch streaming is going to be dead tomorrow, because most definitely not. It's lucrative and here to stay for a while. But
and depending on how long he streamed for, you know, is he getting like $300,000 an hour?
I could use that wage. I would not mind.
Exactly. Same here. So that's going to be it for the news. After this, we're going to go into my review of 2-1-1, the Nicolas Cage movie, and we'll be back with the weird news after that. "2-1-1" is a new crime film starring Nicolas Cage, brought to us by our friends at VVS Films. Now, Nicolas Cage, you're wondering, he's up or down depending on film to film. This is going to be one of his better movies, definitely in my mind. I do find it funny that on the back of the Blu-ray box, you know, it has Nicolas Cage's name, and they put, you know, Mandy, Mom and Dad. They're putting, you know, more recent films that he's been in. But it's just funny because I think pretty much everybody knows who he is, and you don't need to necessarily explain what he's been in. So I'm going to assume these are other films that VVS has probably had their hand in distributing, because they'll want to advertise other films that he's in of theirs. Now, as far as special features go on here, there's sound bites, which is just sort of little interviews from like press junkets that the actors did. And it's worth watching, but you know, nothing too substantial. It's in surround sound. It's a good dynamic track. A lot of the gunfire and everything sounded fine. Not a whole lot of music in this, just a couple songs and some incidental stuff. So it's not a, you know, overly bombastic soundtrack. It just suits the film very well. Cinematically, like as far as cinematography, it's pretty good. One of the better of a low budget film. It's one of the better ones I've seen in quite some time. As far as the actual plot goes, it's actually pretty good. You've got it's basically a ride along gone wrong. There's, you know, backstory stuff that happened, as far as there's military involved, and then there's people robbing a bank. And it basically kicks off when there's a boy that is being bullied at school because he's different. He gets in trouble, blah, blah, blah. Ends up having to do a ride along with the police, sort of to satiate the school's want. And he ends up having a ride along with Nicolas Cage and Nicolas Cage's son-in-law, and while this bank robbery goes down. And it basically all hell breaks loose, and it sort of shows, you know, what are they going to do to survive this and catch the bad guys. It's pretty well done. I was surprised at some of the special effects, like there's makeup effects for gunshots and everything. And there were some that had me a little squeamish. And I'm usually the guy that is not easily, I'm not easily turned off by any film gore or anything. But it looked pretty realistic, especially for the budget. And I was like, wow, that's actually pretty good. If you're wondering how is Nicolas Cage in here on the scale of Nicolas Cage-o-meter as far as, you know, crazy or not, this is a very grounded role for him. He plays it very realistic, very chill. He has a couple of his trademark, you know, explosive moments where he's just like, wah, over the top. And that's perfectly fine with me, because they were appropriate. And I was like, yes, get it, go crazy. But this wasn't, you know, a movie where he was going to go completely nutty, because it's a very grounded film, and he suited it quite well. I would say it's on the better end of his recent films, for sure. This is one I'm going to say is definitely worth buying, because I could see myself watching it again. It's one of those, like, it was raining today, it's the middle of winter, but we had, you know, a rainstorm, whatever, and I went, you know, let's pop it in. I'm going to do the review now. And it was the perfect rainy day movie. I'm going to say it's the kind of thing where every few months, you know, maybe a few times a year, you might want to crack it out and pop it in when it's bad weather and do like a movie marathon of Nicolas Cage. And this is one of those ones that's going to be on my list from now on. Definitely going to share this with family, and they're going to have to check it out. It's rated, I'm not sure what it's rated in the States. It doesn't say. I'm assuming it's unrated because a lot of their films are. But it's 14A up here in Ontario and in Quebec. So it's graphic violence and strong language, standard stuff. Nothing seemed out of place. A little bit of the acting's a little hokey for some of the younger actors that played different police officers. And it's not so much their acting as it was the script was a little off. But yet every scene with Nicolas Cage was great. So it felt like they focused mostly on his dialogue. Now, it's coming out, I believe, this coming week, depending on when this review comes out, on the 19th of March. If you want to know more about the film, you can check it out at vvsmedia.ca or pick it up on Amazon.
What makes you qualified to be a reporter?
I'm willing to violate anyone's privacy for my personal gain and then claim with a straight face that the public has a right to know.
By the hand of Zeus, what manner of deviltry is this?
I love fake alien poop day.
And now it is time for the weird, the wacky, the just plain what the fuck. So this week, of course, some strange things happened, and one of those strange things has to do with Halo and pizza. Last week, they announced that the Master Chief Collection would be coming to the PC, and the developer was quickly swarmed with pizza. After announcing the collection, pizza started to arrive at Studios 343, and Twitter began to jump on board. So Brian Gerard put out a tweet saying, "It has begun. Pizzas are actually showing up at the studio," and showed a picture of the first pizzas to arrive. And within a short time, they were overwhelmed with pizza, including one that was topped with jalapenos and pineapples, which sounds absolutely disgusting, even though I like jalapenos. Pineapple has no place on pizza. Fight me, don't at me.
Yeah, so I like it when you have these weird sort of fan campaigns. Like, it wasn't like they were inviting pizza, was it? It was just a matter of somebody probably on social media is like, let's send them a pizza to thank them.
And it was, I'm trying to find exactly where it began. I think it was a thread last week prior to an inside Xbox announcement that the collection would be making its way to PC game by game, a Reddit thread. Of course, it was Reddit. It's always Reddit. One fan said they would buy the first 343 employee the comments on this pizza if the Master Chief Collection for PC gets announced. After it was announced, well, pizza started showing up. And that's where everything started. Here's one pizza that Brian received, and then the disgusting pizza started showing up, and then Little Caesar started getting involved, and it just went crazy.
And then in response to that, Halo 5, they've gifted players the Last Slice pizza skin for their guns. And it's a skin mod that makes your gun look like it has pepperoni pizza on it.
I think that's an amazing idea. Just something to give back to the community right away. I like to see that fast turnaround and being a little tongue-in-cheek with your fan base. It's a really nice gesture from 343. And it's a nice gesture from the community as well to just deliver a whole bunch of pizza. It's also kind of dangerous, though. Not so much dangerous as wasteful. After a while, they did say, Brian Gerard in a tweet said, "The Halo community is awesome. We're excited, too. Please don't send any more pizzas to 343 Industries. The building receptionist isn't here, so it's getting logistically challenging, and we really don't want to see food go to waste." So I think the message there is, if you want to show your thanks, pizza might not be the best way to go. If you're doing it for something small and less public, sure, okay, pizza's always good. But if you're going to hop on a bandwagon where there's been dozens of pizza already delivered, maybe think again, because you're just sending food to a garbage bin, and that's wasteful for everybody.
Well, if they're smart, they're probably donating the pizzas to, like, local shelters and stuff.
I would hope so. I'm sure they would do something, make sure that the food doesn't go to waste. But I mean, getting inundated with pizza is not something you can really plan for. But it's something
also
like
something
this
I thought I'd say here. I've been inundated with pizza.
I'm drowning in pizza. Anyway, moving from pizza and gaming over to gaming and terrible movies, Doom Annihilation put out its debut trailer, and the trailer is so bad that Bethesda has officially disavowed it.
And you know what's funny is I'm going to call out Birdman here, because do you remember him posting about how he thought it looked good and he was optimistic about it? And I said, are you out of your fucking mind? Like, I saw that and I said to him, dude, it's the worst thing I've ever seen. Like, it looked like an Asylum movie.
The official tweet reads, "We are not involved with the movie," and it's embarrassing. The entire trailer is just bad, and I'm really entertained to see this much of a quick turnaround and saying, no, don't lump us in with them. We're not them. We have nothing to do with it. Please stay away.
Because like the trailer has amateurish acting, like we're talking really bad acting. Very bad sound design, where the voices are way louder than they should be compared to the background music. The special effects are horrendous. The whole film looks like it was made for maybe like less than $1 million, even though it probably costs more than that. They're just really inept. And like the movie that came out initially, the one with The Rock, it was not a great movie. It had that one segment at the end where it actually had the first person perspective, but for the most part, it was at least a competently made and looked like a movie as far as the cinematography and everything. This just looks like something you'd see on like somebody's fan YouTube site.
And it's not like it's trying to break any new ground. It's just doing the same plot again. It's, you know, here's some space marines and here's something happening with Mars and there's demons.
Well, you know, it's bad when like I saw people comparing it to saying, hey, wow, I never thought I'd say that the second and third Starship Troopers movies look better than this.
There's your point of comparison.
Yeah. So it's kind of funny. I'm going to make Birdman watch it. And he's going to, I wonder if he's going to try to double down and be like, no, I think it's cool.
It's a good movie. You just don't appreciate it. I don't appreciate it.
I'm optimistic. I'll give it a try. And I'm like, why? I have more things, better things to do in my life than watch this.
So Doom, try and try again, but please just.
I'm wondering who approved it and who made it, because if Bethesda has nothing to do with it, right?
No, they said they were not associated with the movie. So
then, if they're not associated with it, who licensed it?
Maybe it's one of those Tommy Wiseau sort of things.
What, where like somebody just paid to use the name?
Yeah, it's just money. It's all about money. They wanted to make a film to launder money or something. So they just threw something together.
It almost feels like maybe the movie was a completely different thing, and they're like, well, we can't market it, so let's just pay for a name of something that people know and attach it to it. Like, it might have already been just filmed already, you know, as a generic Space Marine movie.
Yeah, potentially. If someone found a license that they had just kind of lying in the basement while they were doing some spring cleaning, they're like, oh, hey, Doom, let's throw that on the pile.
On this other crap that we've got made that we, you know, need to have released.
So moving from the disgustingly just awful movies to something a bit more serious, I guess, for the sake of weirdness, the Trump administration apparently has been aiming to utilize Facebook to spy on people collecting disability payments. So that's not cool.
I'm
going to
say that this is what's even more funny about this is it's. This crazy, crazy, weird story is listed under the Yahoo Finance website.
I can understand why, from a certain point of view, because it has to do with disability payments and some people's well-being and income. And all of a sudden, the government trying to use social media to decide whether or not you're actually disabled and eligible for these payments. And that's...
Or if you're using the money properly, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think it's mostly meant to identify whether or not you actually qualify for those payments based on where you're going, what you're doing, what you look like, how active you are, and that's
The interesting thing is there, what that's not taking into account is that like 90% of people that are disabled, they don't even present as disabled.
No, exactly. As a strong example, anyone with any sort of mental health issue, it's extremely difficult to communicate that over social media. And for the most part, you don't want to. I suffer with some mental illness problems, and I talk about them openly, including on Facebook, but I don't talk about it all the time. I don't make it my focus on Facebook, because that's not really what Facebook is for. A lot of people use Facebook as a filtered version of their life, where they broadcast the highlights of their life, but the bad parts, the parts that are less cool, the sucky parts, don't make it onto your feed. They just don't. You don't want to share your down moments because it's not entertaining for anyone at all. It's not something you feel like sharing with people.
Absolutely, yeah. And it, here's the thing. I'm more surprised that they weren't doing this already based on basically, now this is personal opinion, how much the government in the states hates paying for anything. They're going to look for any excuse to not have to pay somebody.
Yeah, that's kind of the stigma of disability payments, is the government will look for any reason to say no. And it's generally true. I mean, it's very difficult to get on to any sort of assistance program because the government will look for a reason that you don't qualify, because it's money that they aren't making. It's money that they're paying out.
And that being said, one thing to consider is there are people, I don't know what the percentage is, there are going to be people that do try to lie and cheat their way onto it because they just don't want to work.
Yeah, and that is, I mean, that's the percentage point is being scrutinized. Small.
But they try to make it sound like it's a much larger amount. Like, we're talking, even if it's like, it might be 1% or even less than 1% that actually make it through doing that. So I, from what I was reading on this, it's not necessarily saying that they want to use it to cut people that are already on it. They're trying to use it to, I guess, vet people that are applying for it.
But still, it's a privacy conundrum. It's a situation where, yeah, you have to wonder, should I still be using Facebook at all? Should I still bother with social media? Because my privacy obviously means nothing. But I mean, if you're using Facebook the way a lot of people that I know use Facebook, you don't care about privacy at all in the first place. But that's neither here nor there. They're not expecting the government to be the ones watching your Facebook feed. You're trying to broadcast to your friends and family. But everything you put on Facebook is public. It gets very, very public. Even if you set everything to private, your information is in more places than you think it is.
Yeah, so I mean, this is something to keep an eye on. It's not something that's being done up in Canada yet, but I would actually, I don't think federally they would, being that we have the Liberal government in right now.
No, not here in Canada. I sense a swing towards a conservative government in the near future, but we're getting a little too political. But something to keep an eye on in general in all of North America. And as always with Facebook and social media, don't share it unless you would be willing to share it with the entire world. Just don't put it up.
I think people forget that, and or they'll say something and not realize that it can be, you know, misconstrued later on.
Yeah, like we talked about at the beginning of the show with James Gunn, things that you said 10 years ago can come back to haunt you. And in social media and the world now, everything you say is recorded forever.
The internet never forgets.
No, and the internet has proven that time and time again. It's a scary thought, and I'm glad I grew up when I did, because I did a lot of stupid things as a child.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm grateful that a lot of those things can be forgotten, even by me. So eventually it's like they never happened. But now kids growing up, everything they do is being recorded. And the parents that are more phone than they are human being, it scares me. Every single second of these children's lives is going to be completely recorded, permanently put on the internet. And that's scary. That terrifies me.
Yeah, it's not good. So just basically remember, you know, be careful with what you post. If you're a disabled person, maybe don't post the vacation pics that you went on, because the way it sounds like, if they're saying that if you're disabled, you should never, ever be able to enjoy yourself.
Yeah, disability payments aren't about enjoyment of life. They're about providing basic necessities. I'm not saying that. Yeah. I'm saying that's what it feels like, for the record.
Yeah, exactly. Because what that's not going to take into account are things like, hey, maybe you have your family's like, you know what, we're going to take you with us on the vacation, and we're going to cover you because, you know, you don't have the money to do so. Well, they're not going to read that. They're just going to see that you're somewhere in like Florida and go, or you went like over to like, I don't know, Jamaica or someplace on a cruise. And they're like, well, how could you afford that with disability money? You must be cheating the system, not taking into account that it's family or somebody could have helped you.
And that's what the government's just trying to do. They're just trying to vet the people who are actually taking advantage of the system and don't need it. But then in the crossfire, you end up with a lot of people who just have an honest situation where they came into a bit of money because their grandmother said, hey, let's go on this trip. I'll pay. And suddenly that's going to be a problem. So it's not a good situation. And I'm hoping that the government decides to take a step back. Should Mr. Trump not end up maintaining his office in the near future.
And that being said, it says the whole story is that they plan to do it. They haven't passed a law that allows them to yet.
It's not to say they don't do it already, though. Law or not.
Yeah, officially. It's just whether or not they can say it officially, right?
Yeah, they can use it right now to kind of give suspicion, but they can't use it as evidence. So I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know exactly what the limitations are. But so if you have to take one thing from this, it's be careful what you put on social media. It's like broadcasting to 7.6 billion people, and everyone will see it if they want to find it. So be more scrutinizing about what you actually post.
Absolutely. And that's going to do it for the weird news. After this, we have your review of Fear the Wolves and Satan's Pantry.
Try some yummy stuff or some gross stuff. Who knows?
So we'll be back right after this.
Wonderful! Time for a celebration! Cheese for everyone!
I used to be an adventurer like you. Then I took an arrow in the knee.
Oh yes! Yes, the kindly stranger.
I've been waiting for you to return to consummate our love.
Let me guess. Someone stole your sweet roll.
Welcome back to Satan's Pantry, only on Twig, as we take a walk down the Devil's Grocery Aisle. But as you've noticed over the last few weeks, we are trying things from Inside Editions, The Elder Scrolls, The Official Cookbook. And this book is written by Chelsea Monroe Casile, and we've been trying things from across the continent of Tamriel. Today we find ourselves upon the country of Skyrim, and we're going to be trying something a little bit different. We're going to be trying the leek and cheese crostata, which is a word I've been saying a lot on Twitter this past week as I'm trying to learn how to spell it. But anyway, so I'm going to read you the official blurb from the cookbook. Combining two of Skyrim's more common ingredients, the result is a hearty tart that is great for picnics and afternoon snacks, but can also easily be served as a side dish next to a main course. It is popularly made with Edar cheese, which doesn't really exist, or goat cheese, which does! But a good cheddar also works well. Now, joining me today, as we decide to take this into the city of Whiterun, I'm joined with Mr. Christopher.
Hello, I'm here to try food again.
Exciting times with this. So my lovely wife Blair has been preparing this for most of the afternoon. Says it takes about 25 minutes to make, give or take. This was a rye pie dough, which is a separate recipe in the book. And we have this tart thing, this crostata. I don't know whether crostata is actually a thing. I'm guessing it is. My wife is nodding yes.
I'm pretty sure it is. Crostata.
It's weird. So it looks like a spinach dip, kind of.
Yeah, but it's like baked into a pie crust, sort of.
Yeah, it's... so we're both going to give this a whirl and see how this goes. Yeah, it's like a spinach dip. Oh, man, that's got some nice flavor.
Very much like a spinach dip. It's you can taste the onions, the cheese, for sure.
Mmm. This with goat cheese would be amazing. But, yeah, like, it's, like, it really, like, the cheddar really pops. The leeks there, you can really taste. And I've only ever had leeks, like, two or three times. This, it's just enough onion flavor where it doesn't overpower it. It's a nice... It hits you secondary. You get the cheese first and then the leek. And then the pie crust, you can almost use like a chip and dip it.
That's kind of how I'm doing it.
It's like a self-contained spinach dip.
Mm-hmm.
Without the spinach, of course.
Now, I don't think I've seen this in Skyrim as an actual thing you can make, but I'm also not 100% sure of that, because I think when you got the Hearthstone expansion, where you can start building your own houses, maybe I did see this once or twice, actually. I'm not 100% sure on that, but if this is definitely inspired by the Elder Scrolls, I gotta say, I'm definitely really liking what we've had a chance to try out here on the show. Now, we've had sweet rolls, we've had salt rice porridge, and a preview for next week, I actually got a chance to try a shot of skooma, which is a narcotic in the world of Skyrim. It's supposed to be, like, smoked into a pipe along with nightshade. So, as you can imagine, don't do this at home, kids. But this is, like, it's like an alcohol-based thing made with dried apricots and a simple syrup. It's really, well, you'll have to wait and find out to see what I really think about it. And then we're going to give some to Christopher and then Alex. It's going to be a fun time. I'm looking forward to it. So what would you rate the leek and cheese crostata on a scale of 1 to I just took an arrow in the knee?
I just took some of this crostata to the knee.
And I like it.
I like it. I could definitely live in Tamriel. I'd be comfortable living there with the food.
Mm-hmm. I think the most common cookbook is by a famous orcish or Osmer chef named, I can't remember his name, but I think the book is called Uncommon Taste. My wife is definitely doing her best impression of a Tamriel cook, and I couldn't be happier. So that's definitely a win for us on the Elder Scrolls, the official cookbook from Insight Editions. Big thanks to everybody over there for providing this to us. We'll be back next week with a taste of skooma here on the show. We'll be back right here on Twig, the flagship of stupidity.
My pen is mightier than swords, it's the right choice. They call me MF Doom and I use my voice. With each rap, my speech craft keeps stacking. If you could see the graph, you'd actually be laughing. You'll never sound as fresh, I'm a rock star. I climb the 7,000 steps to High Hrothgar.
Fear the Wolves is one of the many battle royale games to grace the gaming scene in the last couple of years, and it has to be one of the most ill-fated release timings the genre has ever seen. Fear the Wolves has been in early access for several months, working with its rather small player base to improve and adjust the game to make it to the finished product. And just as the game finally releases, the new kid on the block, Apex Legends, comes out and steals just about every Battle Royale enthusiast's attention, even to the point of dethroning Fortnite for a while. Sadly, this means the Wolves of Fear the Wolves have been going quite hungry since then. The player counts are quite low, making it difficult to find a lobby to get playing the game. Compounding this problem is a very large map with a very low player count per lobby, making the game feel very empty. Imagine playing a game of PUBG with only 20 players at the start. It takes a long time to find another player, and if you're the unlucky one to lose that fight, you'll be waiting a long time again to play your next round. Thankfully, there are a significant amount of environmental hazards to deal with that prevent the game from becoming a running simulator. There's the obvious hazard, wolves, who will chase and attack you, providing a risk of early death, and demanding you use up your ammo to stave them off. If this was any other Battle Royale game, this would mean drawing the attention of every other player in the area, but since the nearest player might be 2 minutes away, this becomes more of a nuisance most of the time. More environmental effects that will alter your gameplay are weather and radiation. Weather will force you to play differently, as heavy rains can affect your ability to drive, and thick fog will have you paranoid about what could be waiting just beyond the reaches of your vision. Radiation is another beast, as it will force you to avoid swaths of the oversized map, unless you want to take needless damage and put yourself at a disadvantage. This will have you zigzagging across the map, so you won't be taking the same route every single game. It's difficult to talk about a battle royale game without comparing it to the big guns of the genre, but as someone who was finally brought into the fold by Blackout and Apex Legends, I've been spoiled by the level of polish and finesse those games have. Fear the Wolves feels comparatively clunky and underwhelming. Movement feels stiff and takes away from what realism the game is aiming for. The UI is easy enough to understand, but one of the most important parts of a battle royale, looting, feels slow and laborious. Looting fast and accurately is one of the key aspects of these games that gives them their energy and pacing, and Fear the Wolves lacks that energy the whole way through. Of course, since it's not likely you'll find anyone to shoot at for a while, the pressure to find good gear quickly is somewhat less than average. It's also worth noting that loot is difficult to see quickly, which so many other battle royales do well. Differentiating between different items at a glance is challenging, and if you're in a pinch and need to loot quickly, that can mean death because you didn't click on the right loot from that last corpse you downed. Fear the Wolves also suffers from some technical problems, with intermittent lag and even getting disconnected from a lobby. It never feels good to be halfway through a game and getting dropped after your killing spree, which for me is usually about as high as 1, for the record. Ultimately, Fear the Wolves has some neat ideas to set itself apart from the rest of the genre, but it's a highly competitive genre to be in, and when everyone is looking at the big guys, it's hard to be an underdog, or an underwolf, as it were. With continued development, I could see Fear the Wolves being a potentially enjoyable game, but without a player base to support it, it's difficult to see a bright future. I'd keep an eye on this game, but I can't recommend it in its current state when there are other free-to-play options on the market. Until the next review, I'm Mr. Tristopher for ThisWeekInGeek.net.
All right, so that was an interesting review of Fear the Wolves and Satan's Pantry. One of those cases of, I guess, wrong timing?
Yeah, Fear the Wolves was a game that I could see doing well if there was a lull in Battle Royales, but the timing just wasn't there, and the polish just needs to be there 100% to compete with things like Call of Duty, Fortnite, and now Apex Legends. You need to be shiny, you need to be fast-paced, you need to just kind of be one of those three already in order to be one of those three or beat them. So bad timing and an unfortunate case of wrong place at wrong time.
Yeah, so what do you have coming up this week? Are you working on any games? You planning to do anything for the rest of your vacation?
Yes, I do have a couple of games. I've been working on the Switch a lot lately. Book of Unwritten Tales 2 is still coming in the works. I've got Valley as well, and Unit 4, a little platformer.
Cool. Yeah,
it's a whole lot of the lesser-known titles seems to be my mode of, I'm not sure the phrase I'm looking for here. It's completely left. It went into my head and refused to come out.
So
what I do.
You're doing more of the quickie stuff right now. Where
yeah, short games, small games, indie games. It seems to be what I do the most of. Otherwise, I'm going to continue playing The Division. I do not have a review copy, but that's okay. I decided to buy it for the PC because I like to play shooty games on the PC because PC aiming is something I can do, which seems to be a rarity. The end game is right in front of me, so I just need to level up a little bit more, and then I can start exploring the real game, as people would put it. So that's probably going to be a lot of the next few days off for me whenever I'm not doing housework and other annoying tasks that eventually need to be done, I suppose. But that's me.
Well, fair enough. On my end, I'm still waiting on a few things to come in the mail to review, but I'm sort of just going to be recovering, basically, because I'm still not fully back to 100% me yet. And so I want to sort of blaze through and do as much in The Division 2 as I can. I'm really enjoying it so far. So I think that's it. I know Birdman has a few things on the go. He's got a few reviews he's got coming up. I think one of them is the Star Trek, one of the modules for the RPG, the tabletop game. And then wasn't he going to be playing a game with you that's like a war game thing?
Yes, I think it's a card-based war game based in the Fallout universe. I don't remember a lot of details, but we need to go over it later in this week before we actually play it. It's just one of those little games you can play with 2 to 4 players or something like that. I think Munchkin, but not really Munchkin.
Okay, yeah, and then we have this week we're going to be recording some more Cambridge Chronicles, so we're going to have enough bank that I can start editing them and get them released fairly soon, actually.
Sounds like an exciting week we have.
Yeah, so that's I think it's going to be it for us. So all I can say is bundle up, stay warm, try not to get sick out there, people.
Good advice. The springtime is almost here, so just get through a little bit more winter and we'll have no more snow for a few months. Depending on where you live, of course. You might already be enjoying some sunny weather, you bastard.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll talk to you guys later.
Have a good day or a good night, yes. Wherever you are.
Yes, yes, yes. And that's going to be it for us, people.
Well, that's our show. All right, here's the deal. Every time you watch my show, I will send you $40.
Checks will not be honored.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek, your source for guaranteed nonsense or your money back. Tune in next week for more info on the most important things you didn't need to know. Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net and subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head over to this episode's post at thisweekingeek.net and leave a comment through Facebook Connect. Follow us on Twitter at thisweekingeek.net and follow our Instagram at twig_official_podcast. Social media not your thing? Send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
Just when you think this show is terrible, something wonderful happens.
What?
It ends.
I have to go. Somewhere there is a crime happening.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the... Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, wah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's consider the secret life of the innermost nesting doll. Living most of her life in the dark, inside the other nesting dolls, she has plenty of time to think, if she could. Sadly, she has no brain. However, when an innermost nesting doll hears that Geico not only saves people money, but also has been providing great service for over 75 years, she thinks it's obvious you should switch. Because yes, switching to Geico is a no-brainer. Pity the innermost nesting doll and her lot in life.